Hey everyone, welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are my fellow Voyager actor and passionate supporter of the reigning NCAA college football champion Georgia Bulldogs, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil, and myself, your favorite forever ensign, Garrett Wong. Remember, you can get the full version of this podcast by signing up to become a patron at patreon.com/TheDeltaFlyers.
Wow. Hey. And you know what's funny?
Are you wearing Georgia underneath there? You are.
I am wearing a Georgia.
Yes, you are. I like that shirt.
It's
like a vintage kind of looking shirt. Georgia shirt.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
So Robbie texted me. He's like, listen, can we push our intro like half an hour, a little bit later? Because the game is running a little long. Yeah. And I am more than happy to oblige because I understand his fascination with sports ball at the collegiate level, at least.
Yes.
More of an NFL fan, but all right. So this week's episode.
Yes.
Let us get into that. It's Good Shepherd. So I like the name, at least. Good Shepherd.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah. Okay.
Not sure what that's
Let's
about.
Let's go watch
we'll
that.
Let's go watch it. We'll go watch Good Shepherd. We'll be right back with our recap and discussion. Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material. Woo! Robbie and I are back. Yeah. My goodness.
What an unusual episode.
Very unusual. And I sat there. It's so funny because when I watch episodes now, I think like you, or I'll think about you watching it. And I sit there and I go, Robbie's going, where are the main characters?
Where are the main characters?
But I will say this much. I was right in my guess of
lower
what episode.
Decks.
That, yes, these are the lower deck characters.
I didn't even remember this at all.
Okay. I don't remember the actual episode, the specifics, because when I watched it, I was like, what is going on? But I was also right about the musician that's in this one, too.
That's right.
Yes, Crewman Mitchell. Crewman Mitchell, played by none other than Tom Morello, the guitarist from Rage Against the Machine. So excited because I'm a huge Rage fan. So, yes, that was really
all right. Let's just start talking about guest stars first.
Let's do it. Yeah.
Guest stars with Tom Morello. So he played the junction operator.
Yeah.
He was, Crewman Mitchell. The one that sort of gave her directions, had that little interaction with her on the lower decks.
Mm-hmm.
He is the guitarist for Rage Against the Machine.
Yep.
He's a huge Star Trek fan. Huge.
Yeah, massive.
And in fact, what happened was he had contacted Rick Berman because he heard that Rick Berman's son was a fan of Rage Against the Machine. So he sent a message to the office saying, hey, I hear your son's a fan. I'm a Star Trek fan.
Yeah.
And they started talking. And
that's how I started. Okay.
Yeah. Tom Morello ended up doing two cameos. So he did our show.
Okay.
And he did Star Trek Insurrection, the feature. No lines in that though, but he had makeup on, so he got to sit through like 5 hours of makeup and experience that. And so that's amazing.
Unfortunately, he was on one of the two worst Star Trek movies ever. So, but we also see Tom in the very beginning. We don't see his face, but he walks past. In the very beginning when they're handing
that first scene
that, you know, when they're actually taking the pad and they're walking it all the way down, whatever, they actually there's a crewman who takes it to hand it to Harren. And as he's going down into that lower, you know, the bowels of the ship, he passes a gentleman that's wearing the same blue or teal, whatever you want to call it, Starfleet uniform, which is being worn by Tom Morello. So we kind of see the backside of Tom.
We see him twice
in the episode. One with no lines in his backside, and the other side, we see his face and he talks. So
it's very cool that
he did. All right.
The other officer, or the crewman, holding the pad.
Yes.
He plays the engineer. He does have a little dialogue.
Oh.
His name is Kimball Jemison.
Kimball
Jemison.
Mae Jemison's relation? The astronaut?
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, Mae Jemison, African-American female astronaut. Huge. I mean, that's a very rare last name. J-E-M-I-S-O-N, then?
Yeah.
Then he's probably related to her. If we do some more research, that'd be amazing.
Oh, interesting.
Found that out. Yeah.
Well, Kimball Jemison plays the engineer who carries the pad down there. His first acting role was in 1988, a horror film called The Boy from Hell. The Boy from Hell was his breakthrough role, Kimball Jemison.
That was Tom Paris's nickname season one, The Boy from Hell.
That's right. It was. We have a few other great guest stars. Jay Underwood plays Heron, the grumpy, nerdy, smart guy.
Yeah.
Jay Underwood was great. His very first job was in 1986, a movie called Desert Bloom with with John Voight and Joe Beth Williams.
Oh.
And
not bad.
I remember Desert Bloom was like one of those indie art house films. Yeah. So Jay Underwood was in that.
Yeah.
We also have an actor, Michael Rice. Mm-hmm. Rise, and he played Telfer.
Yes.
The hypochondriac.
Hypochondriac, yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. His very first acting role was in 1996. A movie called Just Friends with Hal Landon was in.
Oh, wow. 96. Okay.
Yeah. And I think Michael Rice became a writer. I think he has a ton of writing credits. But
Rice is now a writer. Okay.
Yeah. Very successful writer. Let's see. Our last guest star is
Arba Joran.
Yes. Arba Joran. Tall Selis.
Selis, yeah.
Who it was pronounced differently by everyone. Janeway kept calling her Selez.
Selez.
And Lana called her Selis, and Selis. I think Telfer called her Selis, but Janeway had her own fancy pronunciation of Selis.
I'm going to say Selis.
Okay, there's John another Selis. Word. We'll have everyone pronounces Tall's last name differently. But
I'm going to say Zoe McClellan.
McClellan. Her first job was in 1994, a movie called Imaginary Crimes with Harvey Keitel was the star. And it had a very young Elizabeth Moss playing a 12-year-old daughter.
Jeez.
And that was one of the big roles. So Elizabeth Moss was, as a child actress, I did not realize that she had a career as a child actor.
Me neither. So at the stuff we learn on this podcast. It's amazing.
Yeah. It really Zoe is. McClellan was also in that.
Okay.
And Zoe McClellan played the very important role of Edgemont Girl Number 4.
Ah, yes. You know, in
Imaginary Crimes.
Yeah. It's important. You have to have small roles begin your career, right?
That's our guest stars. I thought they were all great, by the way. I thought they were all really good.
They did a good job. Oh, Robbie, guess what? We've actually kind of skipped over our poetry synopsis. So let's jump backwards.
Yes.
And we will start with our haiku and our limerick. And here we go for my haiku for Good Shepherd. 3, to go away. Anomaly disables. 2, stay with Janeway.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right.
Because two of them.
Yeah, because two of them say they're not.
One took Heron an escape pod. Heron is the escape pod.
No, I get it.
Okay, good.
Okay. Here's my limerick for Good Shepherd.
Here we go.
We finally meet the crew that works down deep. Janeway says, "Take the away mission leap." When dark matter attacks, the team starts to collapse. But the shepherd always finds the lost sheep.
Oh, yeah.
Bam. Bada, bada, bam, bada, bam, bam, bam. There you go.
There's your limerick. I like that one. I love that one. Okay.
Thank you.
That was short and sweet. That was like a shorter and sweeter limerick than normal. You've become more blippity in the last few.
That's how I like to do it. Blippity blip.
You've become more concise. Okay. Yeah.
Did we talk about the writer and the director? So the writer of is a story by Diana Gitto and teleplay by Diana Gitto and Joe Minoski.
Wow.
So I guess the Joe Minoski, which I can't believe.
Yeah, you got that.
Diana Gitto. So I was like, who is that? I looked her up. This is her first and only writing credit.
Wow.
She has absolutely no other writing credit.
She sold the story to them and they said, hey, we'll get Joe to help you write the actual teleplay.
She wrote a spec script.
Ah. And this is her spec script. And this is her Joe spec cleaned script it up a little bit.
He cleaned it up. Oh, maybe.
Goodness.
Now we're late in season six. They were probably desperate for stories and scripts.
Yes.
So this could have been a spec script that they're like, let's just clean this up. You're absolutely right.
Wow.
But Diana Gitto has no other credits besides this. So I can't talk about it. I can't tell you about her. I have no idea.
I want to track her down now.
Diana
Gitto. I really feel like I want to talk to Ms. Gitto about this. I'm curious. Okay.
Our director is Rick Colby.
Okay.
What
did I say to you in the
intro?
You said,
oh, you're going to guess Rick, right?
And I was like, probably
go
with Colby.
Rick never directed this.
He's not going to direct it now.
And it was Rick Colby.
Damn.
I can't believe. I thought he was done with us by season five or something.
No, he was still there. He did a couple every year.
I love it. It was very well directed. Beautifully directed.
I agree.
Well, let's talk about how it was directed. So the first thing we see is a space shot.
Yeah.
And we're out in space and the camera flies from outside to an upper deck.
I love it.
Into Janeway's ready room window.
I love it. But before it gets to her window, you do see other windows with people walking around in them
down below. So you start to get a sense of this, you know, the size and scale of the ship.
Of course.
Which is a great choice. Yes. Flies into her window.
Yeah.
I want to say it wasn't a perfectly composed. It got a little off angle and
year and the time, I think it's pretty damn
not
good.
Perfect, but cool. I love that they did it. We never do that shot.
Agreed.
So it goes inside the ready room. Chakotay walks in. He says 7 of 9, wants to show her this shipwide efficiency report that she's made of the senior staff. And
she wants to make a presentation, basically.
She wants to make a presentation. And she's like, okay, yeah, I'll put it on the schedule. We'll get to that. So Chakotay also reminds her that they're going to be passing this Class T cluster in the next couple of days. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's not that big a deal. They don't need to alter their course, but maybe they can send the Delta Flyer out for, some kind
of. Yeah, Janeway suggests that. She goes, well, in the very least, we can send the flyer.
Yeah, and get some readings. Right? Get some readings and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So Chakotay leaves, and now so this shot that started in space going into her thing. Mm-hmm. Now we're continuing to move. I love the what Rick did in this opening sequence.
So
moving
cool.
the camera from one room to the next.
Yeah, it tracked Chakotay going onto the bridge from the ready room. I love it.
Yep. Goes right onto the bridge, and he tells everybody what they just discussed. He tells Tom to prepare the Delta Flyer for an away mission as he passes. And Tom just sits there. In fact, goes back to the. I was like, what is Tom? Chakotay just said, prepare the Delta Flyer. Why are you just sitting there? But I think because the camera had to go by, they probably just said, just nod and then the camera will pass by. But I was like, shouldn't I be getting up and starting to move or something?
I think there's a button down at Con that says Delta Flyer prep.
Prepare
mode.
Delta
you just,
Flyer.
Yeah, you just push a little button it goes and just starts, you know, sort of like the self-cleaning mode on your oven or just something like that. It's just, it's automatic. It's cruise control.
It's preheating. It's like the oven preheat.
Yes. You're preheating you're warming up the Delta Flyer. You did it already. You're fine.
But you know, by the way, I do have a Tesla Model 3 as my car.
I do know this, yes. And you call it the Delta Flyer.
Yes, you name it when you get that car. You have to put it on the computer thing because you do. I do sometimes warm up the Tesla. I go on my app and I'll hit like warm up the car because it's freezing out there. And I do warm up the Delta Flyer in real life. I actually do that.
And now, if I get a Tesla, I'm going to call it the Delta Flyer 2.0 because you've already called yours the Delta Flyer.
Yes.
So I got to be 2.0. Okay. All right.
I'm glad we talked this through because now I know why I didn't get up. I was warming up the Delta Flyer.
You were. So Harry is ordered to start continuous scans by Chakotay. So Kim says to Seven, he hails Seven. And Seven says, yes, go ahead. And Kim's like, well, you know, any chance you can increase radiogenic resolution in the long range sensors? The captain wants to get a cleaner look, not closer, but cleaner look at that cluster coming up off the starboard. And Seven says, acknowledged. And so then she says, take these specs to Lieutenant Torres. And she hands them to one of our first guest stars, Zoe McClellan, playing the role of Selena. Okay.
Yeah, she's a Bajoran.
She's a Bajoran.
Now, by the way, when we go to Astromatrix and we see Seven in there, there's Bruman Celis or Selis or whatever, the Bajoran. There's another background.
There is.
That's right.
And I thought to myself, we never have background.
There's never anyone.
No. Why are there suddenly all? Yes. It's like crowded in Astrometric. You know, Seven's all by herself.
You're so right. That's usually her office.
Yeah, right? She's by herself.
No one's ever there.
Yeah. Anyway, she hands the pad, though. She does hand it to Celis.
Yes.
And then Celis walks down the corridor. And the shots are cool because it's sort of, you know, Rick Colby has started this theme of kind of moving from one space to another. So now we're following Celis as she walks down the hall.
Kind of following the pad.
Following the pad. Mm-hmm. Very cool shot. And then she gets in the turbo lift. She says deck 11. So now we're going down. We're kind of starting from the bridge level. There's a theme here as well. We're going down to deck 11. The door opens. She's in engineering. We follow the pad again out of the turbo lift. She hands it to Torres. Mm-hmm. And Torres says, well, we're going to need to transfer 5 terawatts into the sensor array. Mm-hmm. And she hands, Torres puts something in the pad, hands it to an engineer crewman.
Mr. Jemison.
Yes.
Maybe related to Mae Jemison. We don't know that yet.
And then we follow that pad back into the same turbo lift.
Yeah.
And now he says deck 15. Mm-hmm. So now we're going down even more. Mm-hmm. And when the door opens, we are now for the first time on our show seeing what the lower decks look like. We're in the bottom of deck of the ship. I guess it's near the bottom. Super tight hallway. Ugh. We've never seen this before. We follow the pad down this super tight hallway. It looks like a submarine. Mm-hmm. He enters, I think it is the plasma relay room where Heron works, Crewman Heron.
Yeah, I don't even know if it's a room. To me, it's more of a closet.
Closet. It's like a closet.
Plasma sublimation control closet is what I think it is. So
okay.
Very tiny.
But he walks in. Heron says, you know, don't interrupt. I'm trying to disprove Schlettholz's theory of multiple big bangs.
Yeah. So I kept thinking, this is Sheldon from the Big Bang Theory.
Aaron is the smartest dude on
this ship, clearly. But what I didn't like is his mispronunciation of my last name. And part of it is because I wasn't watching this scene being shot. He had to say, because I had to demolish, he says, Wang's second postulate to do it. And only Americans make that mistake of doing the hard A. It is a soft A. So it should be Wang's second postulate. But, you know, it is
he
what
did.
It
he
is.
He said Wang's.
Yeah, he did say
just Wang. Like Janeway says, Salise. Like Salise. There's a lot of mispronunciation.
And just like Tuvok says
sensor,
and we say sensors, right? So there's a little mispronunciation there. But what that reminds me, and what I want to impart to everybody, was that I remember my recollection of filming this episode was that these guest stars really kind of bonded and stuck together. And I felt like an outsider on my own show when I was
around. You know what that reminds me of? When I guest starred on The Next Generation with the First Duty.
Yes.
And we had all the cadets that were in that story.
Oh, yeah.
We bonded.
You guys became all tight, of us. You know, fast friends.
We
very
hung
quickly.
Out at lunch. We went to the commissary together. Yes. We hung out in Will Wheaton's trailer. We just we went to set early. We didn't leave when they were lighting.
Well, again,
it was the same kind of thing.
I felt like an outsider with these guest stars because I, you know, me being as personable as I am, I tried to interject myself into some of their conversations. But they
weren't interested.
No. Yeah. And to be frank with you, to be perfectly honest, I was slightly offended by that. I was like, hey, this is really whose show is this, by the way? You know,
This episode is
theirs. It's pretty much theirs. Yeah.
So Heron doesn't want to look at this pad that we've been following around the ship.
Yes.
He says, you're standing in the way of cosmological history.
Mm-hmm.
And our crewman says, the cosmos is 16 billion years old. It can wait a few minutes. So he hands him the pad.
Yeah. So he does the adjustment, whatever he needs to do.
Power transfer requisition that B'Elanna typed out.
Mm-hmm.
And then that engineer crewman leaves. And we have another shot now of Heron looking out a window. Now we pull out of the window to see that we're down on the bottom of the ship. So
that's as far down as you can get. Am I right?
We're underneath.
We're underneath
this portal.
Oh my goodness.
I just thought Rick Colby knocked out of the park with the opening shot coming in, walking all the way, you know, serpentining through the entire ship all the way down to the lower decks and then pulling out at the bottom. Very cool.
You know what? I didn't realize that 15 was our bottom deck. I didn't get that until this episode, which would have greatly affected my our recreation of that lost episode.
Oh, yeah.
Miracle on deck 15. I would have included some lower decks people in that too, but I didn't realize that.
I didn't realize that was our bottom deck. Now, the thing about deck 15 is if that's our bottom deck, have we ever said like deck 23 or deck?
Nope. I wonder. Not that I can think
of. Are you sure?
I'm pretty damn sure. I mean, if he's on deck 15 and we see the pullout,
we should never have said anything higher than deck 15.
No 16 or 17. No, no. I definitely know. Robbie,
this is homework for the fans. If anybody can prove that we said anything, any number higher than deck 15, then there's a blatant error.
Yes, I recall nothing like that. I definitely.
This is a challenge to the fans.
And I know for sure no one said deck 20 something and never got that high.
Deck 32, deck 199.
Deck 199? You know how Paris funny Voyager lives. Would look if there was deck 199? It would be extremely thin and tall. It would be
It'd be weird.
It'd be very, very, very strange.
Okay.
All right, where are we?
All right, so we come back to space and they have a cool flyby of the underside of the ship, which seems like a new angle. And we have a captain's log. She says, Stardate 53753.2. Long range scans of the T cluster indicated a number of tantalizing anomalies. The away team. The away team should have a field day. Who knows? I may even join them.
Oh. Hey, could that be a name for a band? Like a Trek based? No.
The away team?
Band. No.
What are
tantalizing cluster? Anomalies. Oh. And next on stage, tantalizing anomalies. Yeah. Can you see that?
I can see that.
Okay, good. I can see that. All right.
Okay. So we have this flyby captain's log. She may join them on the away mission. We go inside somebody's quarters we've never seen before. It's Celis or Celeste or Celise.
Or Celise.
Depending on how you want to say it. But we see a roommate sleeping or something.
Yeah. Wait, so, was it? It was a dorm room, kind of. It felt like a dorm room. I don't think there was just one person. It looked like there was multiple. Maybe I'm wrong, but I felt
it looked like there could have been like a, you know, four people or I don't know. But we do see somebody sleeping. Mm-hmm. We hear someone else in the room whispering, saying, Billy, Billy. And then we realize that Celis is under her blanket, trying to wake up her buddy Billy on a comm badge. And finally, he answers and he says, "It's late. Go to sleep." She's got a Sims beacon, you know, like a flashlight, classic kind of dorm room, like, you know. But we see that she needs help, so we're establishing that, like, we've met the smartest guy, Heron, down in the basement. Yeah. Now she may not be the smartest cookie. No. She needs, you know. Not that she's dumb, but it's just, it's not her math and science or not her.
She needs a tutor. She needs a constant tutor for sure. We do see Telfer's quarters a little bit in this interchange of this conversation.
And he's in a bunk bed or something.
No, he's in like his own quarters. That's what I saw.
Oh, I was like, I thought it was a bunk above Malcolm, him.
Maybe. But to me, I kept thinking, all right. I mean, once I watched the entire episode, I was thinking, well, maybe because he was a hypochondriac, he couldn't even live with anybody. He was like too freaked out about being next to anybody.
I think it was
he's the one
bed.
Guy. Yeah. Okay.
I do. I think he was on the bottom bunk.
Okay. All right.
I felt like there was something above him.
I'll go with
But he basically, we see him in his quarters and he says, it's too late and this is too complicated for us to do over the comm. Meet me in the mess hall. And she's like, I don't want to get dressed. But she's got to have this tomorrow. And he says, well, that's your only option. And he hangs up on her.
Yeah.
We start to meet some of these Lower Decks characters. We go to the briefing room now. And all the senior crew are there, except for Tom. Where's Tom?
You're busy prepping the Delta Flyer. Remember?
I guess so. It's like the second episode in a row or near each other.
I imagine
I'm the only one that's not there.
I imagine you're still sitting at the con. You've hit the button. And you're watching that little bar that's slowly loading. Yes.
Like watching the oven heat up.
The oven heat up.
Is it ready?
Is it ready? It's not ready yet. It's still prepping. It's still prepping. That's what you were doing.
The rest of the senior staff are there. Seven is explaining her efficiency analysis to them.
Well, you know what I wrote down? I wrote down, this is the scene where Seven grills all her crewmates, basically. Mm-hmm. And she just, she's so picky. And she, you know, she starts off with Kim. She starts off with Kim. My efficiency rating was 76. And Kim is
not 100. 76 out of 100.
Oh, yeah. And Harry is not happy with that. He's just like, oh, well, okay. And then so she starts saying exactly why the efficiency rating is where it's at. And she says that the crewmen that I have assigned to night shift are frequently left with little to do once the ship's course has been locked in. And it's on me. It's on Harry to give them more work duty or work assignments while, you know, they're, you know,
doing the night
charge of the night shift. Exactly. So that they're more efficient. But then
she only got a 76.
I got 76. Yeah. Is that the only number that she even says? I think so. Yeah. Cause everyone else starts kind of chiming off about like, wait, what's going on?
Yeah, Bellana's like, hey, my score stinks. Why did I get this? Bellana's pissed off.
Failure to utilize expertise. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So Seven talks about crewman Mortimer Heron, who we've already met, deck 15, that he has 5 advanced degrees in theoretical cosmology. And when I first watched this, I thought she said cosmetology. I go, wow, he can do hair. He can do makeup. He can five advanced degrees.
Utilize that expertise.
Yes. Utilize that in cosmology, not cosmetology. But he's only been assigned to the plasma relay room. His talents could be put to better use. And Bellana is like, look, trust me. I've tried. This guy only wants to be in the closet. He doesn't care about leaving his little room at all, ever.
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. We'll leave him down there where he wants to be. Yep. And then she talks about security. And she says security got a near perfect grade. But she does believe the phaser rifles could use some reorganization to make them more accessible during an emergency. And Tuvok's very polite.
Yeah, he
sort of takes it in. He says, I'll look into it.
I will look into this.
Yes. then the doctor starts complaining about how
his score was ruined.
Yeah, his score was ruined because Billy.
Good old Billy Telfer.
Billy Telfer visits sick bay once a week and is always complaining.
Oh, I thought it was once a day. Is it once a week? Oh, once a week. Okay.
A week, right? But he's always in there complaining that he's got some kind of illness. And the doctor's like, he's fine. There's nothing wrong with him. He's Telfer's a hypochondriac. He says that, Telfer's afraid of medication. He's also afraid of counseling. he's just kind of kooky. And that's why the doctor's pissed off about his score.
Yeah.
And but then Harry brings up Seven's score.
Looks like you could use a little bit of improvement yourself, Seven, in astrometrics. Yeah. And Seven, Seven doesn't even deny it. She's like, you are correct. Unfortunately, Tau Celis Orsiles, sensor analyst grade 3.
Mm-hmm.
Her work must be constantly rechecked
mm-hmm.
all the time. So clearly no one trusts anything that Celis does.
Yeah.
Immediately, Seven says she should be removed from astrometrics and reassigned elsewhere. And once again, you brought up an interesting point. Where the heck was Celis in every other scene that we've seen astrometrics? Because if she's been assigned to that department, she's never there. This is the first time we've seen her. No.
But Bellana says absolutely not.
No, she's not going to.
She's got her own problems.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Janeway's got like this look on her face. She's very bothered by something. She dismisses everybody. She's super concentrating.
Yeah.
And Chakotay says, Captain, mm-hmm. what are you thinking? And she says, I realize none of these people have ever been on an away mission.
Yeah.
And Chakotay says, there's plenty of officers that aren't suited to life on a starship. Mm-hmm. And maybe they should just be relieved of their duties so they can pursue their own interests. Maybe they're just not cut out for.
Well, yeah. I mean, the way he says it, he says typically in their first year, they get reassigned, right? But because we're stuck in the Delta Quadrant, no one can get reassigned to another ship or another, department, whatever. So we're kind of stuck with the people that aren't fitting in. And these are the three last non-fitter inners, I guess.
Yeah, and but Chakotay's basically saying, like, look, if they're just not fitting in, why don't you just relieve them of duty? And she goes, they're not Borg drones.
Right.
Like, you can't just deactivate them.
Mm-hmm.
So she decides that they're going to go on this away mission.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a space flyby here. And then we cut inside the mess hall, and we see Telfer and Tall sitting down doing some homework.
Yeah.
Telfer's explaining subspace infrared algorithms to her, trying to help her analyze this data. That's why she called last night.
Did you notice? He kept blocking himself. He kept blocking himself as he was leaning in, as Telfer was leaning in to sell us to say those things. His key light just was being shaded by her head. Yes. Yeah. And I was just like, come on. Like, you gotta know these things, actors. Any of you out there that are up and coming actors, when you're in the shot and all of a sudden you sense it isn't as light as it was before, you've blocked yourself with the other actors. Well, maybe that's whatever it is.
Maybe that's why he became a writer. Because he realized he wasn't cut out for the acting thing. Kind of like the lesson of this episode.
Okay.
Not everyone's cut out for life on a ship.
Okay, so you're right. You're right.
That's why he became a writer.
Okay.
But so he's trying to explain this. He says, break it down into, you know, four or smaller algorithms. He basically says, break it down into smaller things. And then Janeway pops in and they sort of freak out a bit because they don't usually interact with the captain. And she says, it's okay. You know, she comes in and she says, 0G is fun. And they're like, what? And she says, zeta particle derivation, gamma wave frequency, ion distribution, and flow rate of positrons.
Which,
0G is fun.
Yeah. So it's kind of like in music with
EGBDF.
Right. With EGBDF, every good boy does fine, right? Yeah. When you do the scales.
Well, that technique is what. Did you do that?
Yes, you thought it was Bob Picardo. It was not Bob. I taught Bob, and then Bob, and I taught you.
Is it anagrams, or what is it called?
It's like an acronym. So you take the first letter of every word of a complex technobabble sentence or monologue, and then replace it with something easier. And then that'll help you remember all the technobabble.
Zero G is fun. See, Janeway does it.
That was my technique. Janeway does it. And of course, that was probably... it's interesting.
Maybe I wonder if they added it in because
I was telling everyone that maybe. Okay.
Anyway, she gives the little the little memory trick, and then she says, "You know where we're headed. You're going to need it."
Mm-hmm.
And she hands them pads, and she says, "We leave in the morning." So they're realizing, we must be going on an away mission.
You know what? They're sitting here thinking, gosh, we've avoided it for 6 years. And now they finally, there you go.
So she hands them the pads. Then we go inside a turbo lift and we see again, back to that earlier technique.
Following the turbo,
the pad come in and then it tilts up from the pad to Janeway. And she had such a sneaky smile on her face. I don't know if you remember that
shot.
She
did. Like, she did. What was that?
I don't know. I was like,
it was? It was probably because she goes like, I got two of them, two down, one to go.
Yeah.
And this is the one that I'm going to, you know, I'm going to cherish this one. So I think that's what that was.
That's what the smile was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So she says deck 15, which we now know is the lower decks.
Yep.
Door opens. She comes out into this lower deck hallway and she's lost. She's never been down here before. Yeah. Clearly.
Mm-hmm.
She starts walking down a corridor and this is when Tom Morello pops out.
Yeah.
And he says, Captain on deck.
Yeah. He's standing at attention stiffly. Yeah.
Everybody snaps too. And she says, at ease. And she says, where is the junction? Where's junction room 16? She's a little lost.
Yeah.
And the crewman, Tom Morello, points her down in the right direction.
Yeah. Crewman Mitchell, played by Tom Morello.
Crewman Mitchell. And she takes a moment to thank you. And then she says, how have you been? And he replies, never better, ma'am, yourself. She says, not bad. Not bad at all. And then she heads down the hall.
And she goes the wrong way.
I feel like this is a missed opportunity. Well, she didn't. She went down the hall.
Oh, she didn't go one way or the other. She stopped. Yeah.
She stopped. And he says, first junction or on the left or something.
Yeah. To the left,
To the left, ma'am, he says. And I thought, oh, it would have been so much funnier if you saw her never better, not, or not bad or whatever. And then she walks down the hall and goes right and disappears for a second. And then he yells, to the left,
to the
ma'am.
Left, ma'am. And then she comes back through again. Yeah.
It would have been a classic comedy, you know.
Yes.
It would have been a funnier bit. Yeah, but it might have been a little broad or sitcom.
No, I think that would have been great. That would have been awesome. I definitely could see the Doctor doing something like that. But, you know, Janeway doing something like that would have been fun to see that, too. I don't think
it would have been funny.
Yeah, I feel that your thought of it being too heavy-handed, I think it's fine. Because she's never down there. Janeway's never on Deck 15. So that would make total sense to me.
It just would have been a sharper comedic kind of staging and moment. It would have allowed her to be a little funnier. It was a little soft. I mean, it was you got that she got there and looked both ways, and then he said to the left and she went, but it wasn't quite as funny.
Yeah. And once again, you know, for us to have a rock star on our show is pretty exciting. Cool. Yes. Cool. And he did a great job. He was great. He was fine. And you know, he's a huge Trek fan. So there you go.
So cool.
All right.
So now we're in Junction Room 16.
Mm-hmm. Or the closet.
Walks in, or closet. Mm-hmm. She does find Heron.
Yeah.
And he's there leaning on a console.
Yes.
Like he's got his arms down like a kid asleep at his desk in a class.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I thought, never would we be allowed to have to be like so casual. She hands him the pad. He looks at it. He says, oh, this is an away mission list. This must be a mistake. She's like, no. Not a mistake. You're going on an away mission. He's like, I don't want to.
Yeah, I have my duties here. I prefer not to leave my post. Yes. He was like, no, we've got someone to cover for you. So you are leaving your post.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He tells her that, you know, he can't leave. He's about to disprove Schletzholz's theory.
Yeah.
But then she reminds him of Wong's second postulate.
Oh, did she mispronounce it too? Oh, my goodness. I don't remember.
I don't think she did.
Okay. So maybe she said the right thing.
But she does say that the postulate has more lives than a cat, you know, that you solve one thing and then another thing pops up. And
she says, I'll give you a hand once the mission is over.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's the button on this scene. It's like,
and then he goes back to leaning on his desk again.
How casual like. Yes. Yeah. All right.
But now we have a space flyby and then back into astrometrics.
Mm-hmm.
And Janeway has the Lower Decks team now. And giving them their assignments. Tall's assigned to run the sensor analysis.
Mm-hmm.
Heron's going to monitor the subspace particle decay for anything new that they can learn from this star. And Telfer will look for signs of life.
Mm-hmm.
Poor Telfer. He's like the red shirt here. He's things are not going to go well for him. Even though it's unlikely that there's any signs of life. Telfer panics. He's like, wait, we're gonna go down to a planet? And she's like, no, we're not. I don't think we're gonna end up going on a planet. But even if we did, the Delta Flyer is equipped for any medical emergencies. You'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
And so they got their assignments, off they go. And Seven tells Janeway that Celis is unreliable. And I can't remember how Seven pronounced it. I think she pronounced it Celis.
Did she? Okay.
I think so. Janeway later says Celis all the time. Clearly, she doesn't know these lower decks.
As in, Celis Navidad.
Yes. But Seven says, you can't trust Tall. She makes tons of errors. This away team needs more experience. And Janeway says, tells her the story of the Good Shepherd.
Yeah. This is the name of the episode comes up. Yes.
She says, even if one sheep from the flock goes astray, that the shepherd would leave the safety of the flock to retrieve that lost sheep.
Yes.
And she says, you know, this team, they just need some personal attention.
Yes.
And that Janeway is not going to abandon a single crew member. So you see kind of Janeway's mission here.
And really, the only lost sheep amongst these three truly is Celis. Or Celeste. Celis Navidad. She is the lost sheep.
Heron's lost. He wants to just
leave. But Heron knows the algorithms. Heron knows Starfleet protocol. Heron is not an idiot.
But he's Heron's lost just socially. He's lost socially.
He's a hypochondriac, though. We all know hypochondriacs.
No, not Heron. Heron's the smart guy.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Telfer.
Telfer is the you were saying Heron is another lost sheep in a way, right?
Yeah, because he's totally alone socially.
You're right. He has no social skills whatsoever. But he prefers it that way. He doesn't want to have social skills. Yeah. So I still feel like the real true lost sheep is Celeste.
in this episode.
Or sell us.
Or sell us.
Boy, this name is gonna
about C to the E to the L to the ES.
We could say that.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is a company that's pushing back against this tide. They make high-quality clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more right here in the USA. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com. Promo code STAPLE20.
Okay, long. So okay. Off they go from Astrometrics. Now they're in the mess hall.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, now we're in the mess hall. There's Tom and B'Elanna sitting. And and then Tom and B'Elanna are eating silently. Then Neelix sits down, notices their awkward silence.
They rack focus. I mean, when you guys are sitting down, they rack focus to Heron in the background, yes. Sitting there.
Yes.
And they,
drinking then they coffee, up, working on a pad.
Then they pull back. Yeah.
In a corner and by himself.
What were you about to say that I interrupted you on?
I just wanted to say Ethan Phillips sits down, funny, does weird body movements, looks at us, and then kind of looks behind and makes a face. All he doesn't even have to have words to make me laugh. Oh, I just laughed.
I know you do.
He's so funny.
I know you do. And it's funny because his first line, when he says, I'll bet you haven't said two words to him. It didn't come out like Neelix. It came out like Ethan Phillips speaking to Robbie McNeil, to me. I was like, this is like, no, this is, he totally pulled out a character for a second for me. I was like, okay, that's Ethan Phillips.
Yeah. It was funny.
Yep.
It's a cute little scene. I liked this scene. I'll say overall, I thought it was a fun scene.
Yeah.
Tom teases B'Elanna. He's like, well, too bad she doesn't have a superior that cares about him. And she's like, not my job to take care of people. Mm-hmm. And then Neelix says, I bet you haven't said two words to him. Paris says, I said exactly two words to him. Once during a Borg attack, we ran into each other in the hallway and I said, excuse me, two words.
<That's> two.
and then Tom goes, you know, we were at red alert, so I thought it was quite courteous. Very funny.
So your honey encourages you to go over and give him some encouragement for his first away mission.
Tom,
so you're being
over.
Nice. You're being nice. And Heron, who has no social skills, just comes off as rude, brusque.
Paris says, well, hey, what are you working on? And he looks at him and he shows him the pad. And it is like the most complex, a beautiful equation. Mind sort of equation of every complex symbol I've ever seen in math.
Yes, yes.
And
Goodwill Hunting.
Or Goodwill Hunting or something.
Paris is very interesting. That's all that Paris can say about this crazy equation, right?
It's very funny. And then he goes, oh, really? What part of it specifically is most interesting to you? And then I love how Paris goes, your creative use of the minus sign. Tom's not.
No.
Tom is not the best math.
No. And then he just sort of cuts into your job at the helm. He kind of, he busts your he messes with you in this scene. And then you react kindly or you react appropriately. And you are like, I enjoy the view. And then you just leave abruptly because you give up on it.
Just rude.
You didn't even
B'Elanna says,
it.
How'd it go?
Yeah.
And then Tom says, oh, really well. I invited him over to watch our television set tonight. Hope you don't mind. So it was a fun little scene.
It was fun. I wasn't sure how she reacted to that last line, though. Roxanne.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it didn't. Yeah,
I felt like she was like, I don't believe you. I felt like her response was like, I don't believe you.
Yeah, okay. I felt like there was something left on the table there that could have been played a little bit more. Just like how you felt like Janeway walking down to the right would have been funny if then she came back in the frame. I feel like there's some a little extra stronger button here. No. Yeah, something.
Yeah,
stronger.
Maybe.
Okay.
But it was a fun scene. That was about my only scene in the whole, besides sitting in the chair and not getting up when Chakotay said, right.
Besides warming up the Delta Flyer. Yeah, you don't have a lot.
I think that's about it in the whole episode. Okay. Anyway, we go to back to Tall's quarters and she's sleeping and suddenly her comm badge beeps on the table. I don't think that was a comm badge with the Velcro on the backside.
Twas not.
You know, we had the comm badges that we wore and they were attached by Velcro.
That's
but they
right.
also had some when they had to be loose.
Yeah.
That were finished on the backside.
That's so, right. And that was one of them.
That was one of them.
Mm-hmm. Telfer
calls. Yeah. She says, I know what you're going to say and you're not sick. And he goes, no, I am. I'm really sick. And he's scanning himself with a medical tricorder. And she just says, you're not sick, and hangs up on him, goes back to sleep.
Oh, my God.
Very funny. We go into sick bay next. Yeah. Mm. And I love this low angle with the doctor scanning.
Yeah, stuff. It was cool.
Again, you know, Rick Colby just does a great job. Mm-hmm. Doc says, your temperature is 0.2 degrees above normal. You're fine. And he goes, no. I may have a multiphasic prion. What's a multiphasic prion?
I don't know. That's like the follow-up to the Prius. So
I guess so.
I don't know. But evidently it's something that attaches themselves to the mitochondrial walls. And they, you know, they basically cause your cell membranes to rupture or something like that.
Something like that. I've never heard of prion. Yeah. The doctor says
that was Priam, actually. I'm talking about Helen of Troy times. So
I don't know.
Priam, not prion. Okay.
It's something obscure. The doctor is like, you do not have a prion.
Yes.
And he's Doc says, I'm not going to give you a medical excuse to avoid going on this away mission. Now go have fun. Mm-hmm. This is what we're here to do, is explore. And you'll
he
have
confiscates
so much...
his tricorder. Yes. And you should not even have a medical tricorder.
Yes.
Love it.
It's very funny. He says, you're going to have so much fun on this. You'll forget about his hypochondria. You'll forget all about it.
And that's right.
It'll remind you of why you're here.
Mm-hmm.
So we feel like, you know, this is going to be good for Telfer. Yeah. Little does he know.
Little does he know.
So we have a Delta Flyer flyby here. Mm-hmm. Delta Flyer's at warp. Mm-hmm. The stars are streaming by. We go inside. Janeway's piloting. She's sitting in my chair with the manual controls that I added, the vintage manual controls.
I don't think she even knows how to fly the flyer.
Well, that's what I was wondering.
Like, she doesn't
have I given
know.
Her lessons?
No, like, she doesn't know.
It takes a special license to fly that
it thing. Sure does.
But she's piloting. She says drop to 1/4 impulse, has Celis or Celez start a sense. This is where I noticed that she's calling her the wrong name.
Okay.
she says start a sensor sweep. And then there's kind of a shudder, like a jolt in the ship.
Yeah.
And Heron says that wasn't the engines. Celis scans for any problems, but doesn't find anything. Mm-hmm. And then Telfer, who's in the back, evidently, on the comm, he says, hey, anybody want some lunch?
Yeah, it's lunchtime already.
Celis is like, sure, I can help. Captain, what do you want? And Janeway thinks about it. She turns back to Heron and says, Mortimer. And he says, even my mother doesn't call me that.
Well, okay.
That's his first name. So Janeway kind of rolls her eyes. One of many eye rolls that she gives in this scene.
Yeah.
And she says, I'll have Neelix's minestrone soup. And she says, it's a replicator program Neelix 651.
Yeah.
So,
and I got to say, this is the first time we've ever referred to any food replicator programs labeled Neelix.
Yeah.
651. Like, I guess
this is every his recipe,
single, I suppose. Or does everything in the replicator that's edible under the file heading Neelix and then a number? Maybe everything is Neelix.
Something. I think it's only the things he's invented. Like, if you just say tomato soup, plain,
you don't need to
soup.
Have Neelix, whatever.
Yeah, it's okay. Just the classic
I'll buy that. That makes sense.
But if you want Neelix tomato soup 534, that's a whole different recipe.
Sure is.
It's delicious.
It has Leola root.
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Then we go in the back of the Delta Flyer. There's Telfer back there. Tall walks in the door. She orders a computer, a Neelix 651, two servings. And she's bummed out because she says, Janeway checks everything that I do. And she's like, I just want to go back to Voyager.
Telfer tries to make her feel better. He's like, no, no, that's standard procedure.
Yeah. But he also wants to go back to Voyager.
Yes.
He says at the end of this, yeah, she says she basically has no confidence, no self-esteem about her work. She thinks Janeway's checking on everything. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to be here either. And in the end, he says, well, we can always use the escape pods.
And it's interesting that he says that because that does come up later. But yet it's not Celes or Telfer that is in the escape
pod. Or Celes.
Yeah, or Celes.
Or Tall.
It's actually Harren.
So many names. So many names in this. We go back up front.
Yeah.
And Janeway is really trying to start a conversation with Harren.
But he's rude to her, too.
He is so rude.
Oh, my God.
She asks about him growing up on Vico 5.
Yeah.
And he says, do you really believe that the environment a child is raised in is more important than the genetically driven behavior patterns? So he's basically saying like nature and nurture, and he's all about science. Like, what does it matter where I grew up? Like, you know, my DNA decides who I am.
And this is so Sheldon from Big Bang Theory. It's funny.
It was very funny.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically accuses her of trying to attempt conversation with him with assumptions that he just doesn't agree with. So he's basically saying like, why are you trying to start a conversation with me about things that I don't even agree with you about? He's just very combative.
He's just annoying me. He already annoyed me when he mispronounced my last name in the beginning.
No, so that's
from that point forward, he already had negative brownie points with me. So
he does. And then he tries to change the subject and he says he only signed on to Voyager because the Orion Institute of Cosmology requires a single year of hands-on experience. And if they hadn't become stranded in the Delta Quadrant, he wouldn't even be here.
That's anymore. Right. Like he'd be gone.
He didn't want to be here.
Good riddance. He
just had to do it because of the Institute of Cosmology's rules.
I'm going to think of it as the Institute of Cosmetology.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But Jane was like, yeah, well, here we are in the Delta Quadrant, but that's the great thing about space exploration. It's unpredictable. And you never know what's going to happen. He goes, exactly. That's why I don't like space exploration. He likes to know what's going to happen.
Yes.
And she says, well, the reason that you're here on this away mission is I want you and the rest of this Lower Decks crew to fulfill their full potential. I want you guys to, you know, to be able to do your best and reach your potential. And he says something like, well, do you feel responsible? And she's like, for what? For us three misfits? You know?
Yeah.
He's like, if there's anything I can do to relieve your guilt, because he's basically saying, oh, you brought us on this away mission because you feel guilty.
Yeah, pretty much. None of us really want to be here.
And you're just doing this because you feel guilty.
Oh, yeah.
And he goes, I'm going to go join my team for some food.
He says all this exploration has given me an appetite. Exploration, a.k.a. banter with the captain.
Conversation.
It's too much for him. Too much work.
Yes.
So, yes. But it's that point that we have a big hit at this point.
Yes. Yeah. She goes back to he walks to the back to have some food. And then the captain rolls her eyes. One of many eye rolls to Harren. Yes. And then suddenly there's the ship is kind of bumped and rocked. And she goes back to where I think Celes was sitting to scan for what that was. Then it's a big hit, and we see out in space that a piece of the hull literally.
Yeah. So the hull plating.
Like
it's pretty big too, from what it looks like. Right. Yeah, this is a big piece of the hull, and it's just kind of floating
it
in space.
It shears right off, flies off the ship, and she yells, "Red alert!" And she calls for the crew in the back, but we cut away. You know, she basically says, you know, red alert and get up here or something.
Mm-hmm.
We go to space. And I guess this is where there was a commercial break. That was the end of the act.
Okay.
Oh, Janeway's in trouble. We come back and The Delta Flyer is just dead in the water. It's just floating in space now. And we see the hull is damaged below.
All we have, I think, is 1/10 impulse, which is not a lot. That's really slow.
Yeah. Janeway brings the emergency power back on. Harren says 90% of the antimatter has been drained, and 1/8 impulse is the best the engines can do. That's what
Was it 1/8? Oh, I said 1/8. Wrong. Okay.
Think so. He says that means that it could be 10 years before we reach Voyager. Great. So Janeway says, let's transmit a distress call. And so she sends out this distress call, asks Salise or Tal or Celis, however you pronounce her name, checking the sensors. They scan. Harren thinks that it was dark matter protocomet, that it was theoretical, that he thinks it was dark matter turning into a proto comet.
Yeah. Which Janeway is attracted to antimatter is what it is.
Yes. Mm. And she said, she read about that once. Harren goes, yeah, it's a theory that I wrote about. You read what I wrote. So again, combative. And
she says, I read a paper on that phenomenon once. He goes, written by me. This is what he did. So little cocky son of a gun.
Yeah, but Harren basically theorized that this dark matter would consolidate into like a comet-like assembly of this dark matter, and it would be attracted to antimatter and neutralize it on contact. So it was like, it was almost like magnets, right? It was like a positive and negative, sort of a theory like that. And so he says, if that's the case, we should just eject all the remaining antimatter.
Eject the warp core, the entire warp core.
Yeah, eject the warp core, right? And Janeway says, well, we can't do that. That's our only way to get propulsion back online.
Yeah.
I think he insults Tal at one point. Like, the Celis, he says something about, well, she's no help or something. So doesn't he say something about her? Janeway says, we got to keep that warp core in the antimatter because that's the only way we're going to have propulsion. Ask Celis to do something.
Oh, okay. So what
scan
it was
for the whole plating.
No, because Janeway says, because he says, look, you know, it's attracted to antimatter, and he suggests ejecting the warp core. So Janeway says, eject the warp core, and we lose any hope of getting warp drive back. And I need more evidence. And right now, sensors are not talking. And then Harren says, well, maybe they are talking, but somebody doesn't know how to listen to them.
That's
he's insulting Celis at this point.
Somebody doesn't know how to, and she feels bad. And then
And Janeway says, you're out of line, crewman. So she's trying to put him in his place, really. Yeah.
But Celis does locate the hull. She does find it on sensors, and then she says to beam it back to the aft section or something. So they go back there. We're in the aft section. Janeway is scanning the hull plate that they've located and beam back into the
correct.
Back.
Correct.
She says there's no plasma burns. There's no evidence of anything here. It was just sheared right off. But she does hand the tricorder to Celis and has her downloaded on the computer. And Tal's really feels horrible. She feels guilty for not detecting these fluctuations earlier, that it's her fault that this happened. And Janeway is really, you know, sweet to her. She says, don't doubt yourself. You shouldn't be so hard on yourself. And Janeway says, you know, I doubt myself too. I make mistakes all the time. And Celis says something like, oh, every day.
Every day?
Every time every time you report for duty, you make mistakes. That's me. And
she talks about Seven not trusting her at all.
Yeah. She says, Seven doesn't let me do anything important, which is fine. But out here, if I make a mistake, we could all die.
Yeah.
We do learn a little about her backstory how she got through Starfleet Academy.
She crammed every single. But then Janeway even says, well, that was something that I did as well. She says that she was infamous for her all-nighters. Janeway pulled a bunch of all-nighters, the Academy. Mm-hmm. And Celis is like, what, every single night? Because that's what it took for me. So evidently, Celis barely kept her head above water at Starfleet.
Well, she also says something about like Starfleet really was eager to get Bajorans in.
Yes.
After the war.
Yes.
That the like conflict with Bajor
worked, type of thing.
Yeah. Worked in her favor. Mm-hmm. And Janeway says, no, I brought you aboard here because of your unconventional thinking. Mm-hmm. And Tal says, I don't deserve to be on this ship. I'm not really a part of Voyager. Yeah. I just live here.
Yeah.
And it was very sad.
This whole scene was
there was a lot to this scene. That's why we were meandering around, because there were so many great moments between Janeway and Celis here that really shows how everybody has low self-esteem at some points and everybody struggles, and that you need somebody to sort of believe in you and when you can't believe in yourself. And Janeway's doing that for Tall.
This whole thing is really Janeway saying, Tall, turn your frown upside down, like change your attitude.
I got your back.
I think the sad part for me is Celis responding, well, you know, this has nothing to do with attitude, Captain. You and I are wired differently. To you, this is nothing but data. But to me, this is a monster with fangs and claws. It's in my nightmares. I'm chased by algorithms. My brain just wasn't built to understand this. So Janeway says, like, okay, well, we can find you another post on Voyager. And Celis is like, well, there really isn't another post on Voyager for me unless you need a waitress. Before she even said that, I said, you could work in the mess hall with Neelix. That's what I thought. She even suggests that. But it's very sad, you know, that she's basically accepted the fact that this is not her cup of tea at all, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Great scene. I like that scene.
Yeah, it's a good scene.
We go back to the front and Heron's working on the EPS relay. I love the shot that Rick did down through that foreground stuff, a really cool angle with Telfer in the background.
Twas.
Mm-hmm. Telfer scanning himself with a medical bike or something. He's scanning
as
himself.
As he does.
And Heron says, cut the plasma flow, but Telfer's
too busy
scanning himself. And the EPS relay starts to vent some gas.
Yeah.
And Telfer finally hits the button and Heron's pissed off.
Yeah.
And he says, you know what? You could have gotten us killed.
You could have gotten me killed is what
it is. Me killed. And then Telfer says, aren't you ever lonely down there? You know, where you work? But Heron says, no, I prefer being by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And Telfer says, well, maybe you can spend some time with me and Tall when we get back.
Mm.
And Heron says, he doesn't want to socialize. Doesn't want to hang out with people. Mm-hmm. He's fine by himself. So that's the kind of reinforcing where those guys are up front.
Yeah. We have captain's log. We have a status update, basically minimal power and no response from the distress call. Voyager is not aware of what's going on. And we're back in the cockpit and Janeway says the scans of the hull fragment were absolutely inconclusive. We found some displaced positrons that could indicate a dark matter impact, but it's not for certain. Mm-hmm. Because Telfer even says that could have been caused by something else. But Heron believes that's enough proof. Janeway doesn't believe that's enough for her. Mm-hmm. She says not enough to jettison the remaining antimatter, because that's pretty much what Heron wants. He wants that whole warp core to be ejected. And the conversation continues back and forth.
She talks about a gas giant within range, and it's surrounded by radiogenic rings. So something like Saturn is what she's describing, these rings that could possibly reinitiate the warp core.
Yes.
So set a course there. So they head towards this gas giant with the rings around it.
Mm-hmm.
Go back to their stations. Tall picks up more fluctuations like before. And Janeway tries to hail it.
Mm-hmm.
She calls out in case there's some kind of life form there. Right. So she's starting to, you know, have her own ideas that aren't Heron's, but he still wants to eject the warp core.
Yeah.
Janeway says, no, let's fire a photon torpedo.
Mm.
And if it was, the antimatter in the photon torpedo would draw that anomaly in, if that's what it is, if Heron's right.
Yeah.
So they fire this torpedo. And just as they do that, the spatial disruptions start happening. And there's this sound inside the cockpit. There's like this murmuring sound and they all start scanning. And I love how they're all scanning. And then Tall Celis gets up and starts scanning over towards Telfer. Heron gets up. He starts standing. They're all sort of scanning Telfer. And then suddenly he's sitting in his chair. He sort of disappears.
Yeah, he says, oh, no. And then he disappears. He's just gone.
Oh, no. And then he disappears. And then they scan around. He's not anywhere.
Yeah. They can't locate his biosignature.
His biosignatures in space or subspace.
Or subspace, which makes absolutely zero sense because you have to be in one place. You can't be completely devoid of any location, right? Yeah. You have to have a location.
While they're scanning for him, though, he suddenly beams back in just where he disappeared from.
But he's fallen onto the ground when he
falls down. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. And he falls down and he goes, inside me.
Yes. And when he did that, all I could think of was you on One More Mountain going, eat me. I mean, you didn't say that, but you thought you said
that. But I thought I said that.
Me. Yes. And so did you think of that too when you watched the scene?
I did, actually.
See, we're of like mind, Robbie McNeil.
I did.
Yeah.
I thought about when I had to do that Donner Party movie. And
yes. Inside me. So
but he's down on the ground. And then we see this weird, like.
It's under his skin. Yeah, it's just moving around underneath his skin, this whatever it is, this strange thing.
It was gross. Mm. Good vis effects there, by the way.
Yeah, it was.
We come back. We're in the back of the flyer this time, and they're walking him into the biobed section. Yeah. How did he go from falling down with a snake under his skin to being able to walk? I have no idea. I wish they had just picked him up with him in the biobed and skipped the walk.
That would have been nice. Janeway does say activate the transporter. She wants to get a lock on whatever's inside of him. Mm-hmm. But the tricorder is not picking up anything at all. But Telfer still feels it.
Yeah. Yeah, he says that he was transported into some dark place. He couldn't see anything. He tried to talk. There was no air there. Mm-hmm. Tall's trying to comfort him. You know, she says, Billy, if they wanted to kill you, they would have done it already.
Yeah.
Janeway says Salise again. She does act. Janeway does activate a force field, though, around the biobed and leaves Tall to monitor Telfer back there.
Well, Telfer actually asks for a hypo spray to knock him out. And Janeway's like, no. I mean, I could sedate you, but no, this would possibly lower your immune response. You need to stay conscious. And that's when she activates that force field.
Activates the force field around the thing. And then we go up to the front and Janeway and Heron are up there. And Heron's like, I should have never left Voyager. Like, I knew I shouldn't have done this. This was stupid. I didn't want to be here. And I knew this would not be fun. And Janeway says, Voyager is not a safe place either.
It's true.
Yeah. And she said, we've been up against the Borg, the Vidian, species 8472, mm-hmm. and so many more things. And she says, aren't you proud when we accomplish something, when we, you know, have to deal with these unexpected things and we survive? And he's like, no, no, he doesn't get any joy or satisfaction.
No,
out of that.
Not one bit at all.
She's like, don't you want to be a part of this crew and the friendships that you see all around you? And he basically says, no, you don't know me at all.
No, he doesn't want to be a part of the crew. He wants to be a party pooper is what he wants to be.
Yep. But they do receive some kind of transmission on a Starfleet frequency.
Heron thinks it's Voyager.
Voyager. Like,
oh! Yeah.
And adjust some buttons here. And they do hear this transmission, it is their own distress call.
It's Janeway. Janeway saying the same thing, basically. Yeah. So they called it a subspace echo, is what Heron says.
Exactly. And he thinks that they're just teasing them. And Janeway thinks that they're trying to communicate, that, you know, he thinks it's basically glass half empty and she thinks it's glass half full, that there could be something here. They're going to try to modulate the universal translator. See if that maybe they're sending a message back through their emergency signal. And suddenly Telfer walks in and he said,
followed by Celis.
Yeah. Yeah. Celis is behind him. And he says, I walked right through the force field. Celis says he walked right through the force field. And then Telfer says the aliens are in control now. They're controlling my body. I'm not doing this.
Yeah.
And he says, Captain, you're going to have to stop me.
So she fires on him.
She fires on him. She stuns him.
This episode is crazy. It really is. Okay.
There's that snake coming out of his neck again. And
oh, God.
Basically, it breaks through and jumps onto his console.
Yeah. And starts interfacing with the console.
Yes.
And it's connecting into the console. And of course, Heron thinks it's tapping into our systems. Janeway thinks it's trying to communicate. So Janeway, half full, is like, look, this is the way we can communicate. Heron, half empty, is like, no.
We've got to shoot it.
So he grabs, does he grab his own phaser or does he grab Janeway's
phaser? I think he grabs his own phaser, but she orders him to
hold your fire. Yeah, but he vaporizes.
Gives him a direct order and he fires at the alien anyway, vaporizes the thing. Janeway knocks the phaser out of his hand and yells at him.
She's so mad.
And
she says, what the hell is wrong with you? That's what she says.
Yep. And now they've lost their chance for first contact. Yeah.
I mean, Heron still believes it was trying to kill everybody on the ship. So now they're screwed royally. Mm-hmm.
And there's another like shake jolt of the ship. More of the hull is sheared off.
Mm-hmm.
And Janeway decides to take the flyer into the rings of the gas giant.
Well, before you get to that point, I think Telfer says that when the organism left his body, he could hear what it was thinking. And and that message was, do not belong.
That's
do
right.
not belong. So Aaron was saying, well, we don't belong here. And Celis is like, well, it did not belong in the Delta Flyer. And Janeway was like, well, maybe it was tapping into the environmental controls because it was trying to survive in a place that it didn't belong. And Heron's like, no, that's just your speculation, not factually based at all. Mm-hmm. And Janeway's like, well, it's based on direct observation. You murdered an alien being and destroyed any chance we had to make first contact. So then, that's pretty much when we hit the second whoomp. And another piece of the hull gets sheared off.
Yep.
And now we are heading into,
the radiogenic ring. The radiogenic rings. They could only survive for a few minutes in there, but it might be long enough to restart the warp core. So
yeah, that's all they want to do.
Cut out to space. We see the flyer heading into the rings of Saturn, basically, is what it looked like to me.
Yes.
It was a cool shot.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was super cool.
I liked it.
And we see the flyer flying through these rocks or asteroids or whatever, which reminds me of our opening credits. I wonder if they use the same VisiFX elements, you know, because it's our opening credits are beautiful. Some of the shots of the ship and stuff. Mm-hmm. And this was another just beautiful shot. So I wonder if they kind of reuse some of those elements because it looked really cool. We go inside the flyer and they're transporting radiogenic particles into the reaction chamber.
Do you want to talk about the thing that Telfer, what happened to Telfer? He always, because Janeway asks Telfer how he's doing and he talks about how he's always had this kind of a second sense or he has an alarm in his head.
Always thought he was sick or he was dying.
Exactly. He poisoned.
Anxiety.
Yes. And Janeway's like, well, what? That voice is not there any longer? And he's like, no.
Yeah, he's like smiling.
It's totally like gone. So really, guess what happened? That organism scanned Telfer, knew that he was a hypochondriac, and fixed him somehow is what it was. So clearly, this was not an organism that was trying to kill us.
And she says when she was a child, she was afraid of the ocean. She talks about that.
Yeah.
And she says she used to like to swim in the shallow parts. You don't always know what's underneath you. And when she was at the academy, she had to go through zero G training in the coral sea.
Yeah.
And she overcame her fear of the ocean there.
Yeah.
And then she says to him, I think you just came up from your first deep dive is her last line to him. Because he does feel this relief that anxiety's all gone. Yeah. So then Tall interrupts and says the aliens are in pursuit.
Yeah. Something invisible is making the ring fragments move apart. So it's coming at them basically.
Yeah.
3 minutes and, then, and 20 seconds to intercept.
So then Heron says, we need twice that amount of time to get the warp core restarted.
Mm-hmm.
So Janeway thinks, and she says, all right, everybody get in the escape pods.
Yep. Well, she says, get into the escape pods. Hopefully, you know, you guys can get away, plot a course away from this planet. She's going to fire a phaser volley and hopefully set off a chain reaction of these radiogenic particles. And it might just be enough to disable the
whatever it is that's coming this at them alien right now.
Force.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Clearly the buddies of the vaporized organism that Heron totally screwed up with.
Yeah. So Janeway is basically saying, you guys get in the escape pods. You need to save yourselves. I've got this really risky thing I'm going to try, but I don't want to risk your lives. Exactly. Too. So you guys get in the escape pods. Mm-hmm. And then Tall says she wants to stay. She's like, nope, I'm not leaving.
Mm-hmm.
And then she gives the other team members a little pep talk.
Yeah.
She's like, you know, when we're on Voyager, what we do doesn't really matter, but here, what we do is important. It makes a difference. And I'm going to stay. And then Telfer says, me too. I'm going to stay too.
And Heron says, not me. I'm going to go into an escape pod.
I'll get out of here. I guess I'll be alone. And so he gets in the escape pod. We see the escape pod come out.
Yeah.
And then we realize Heron has altered the course of the escape pod.
Heron is a hero. Look at that.
He turns into
a hero.
He's going
to take one for the team. He's like, nah, I'm going to go ahead and just, I'm going to draw all the attraction or the attention of these alien organisms away from the Delta Flyer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, who knew that he was going to turn like that and actually become someone that is going to be a hero in essence.
Yeah. He says he'll buy them some time, and maybe by sacrificing himself, he'll realize what he's been missing.
Right.
Interesting.
It's like, okay.
Yes. But Janeway's like, nope, get a lock on him. We're going to beam him.
Well, not only him, she beams the entire escape pod back
onto
the Delta.
And they're out of transporter range. They're too far away. So she says, speed up, more power to the thrusters. Let's get closer. We see the pod heading right towards the dark matter.
Yeah.
And just before it hits the dark matter, it's like playing a game of chicken, right? It's heading right toward it. And the flyer swoops in, beams him out of the collision with the dark matter.
Yeah.
And then heads out of the rings. And just as they're heading out of the rings,
Janeway fires, right?
Fire the phasers at the radiogenic rocks, and it explodes, causing this chain reaction. And the shockwave is just approaching the flyer from behind. Tall is counting down to impact. She goes, 3 seconds till impact. 3, 2, 1.
Nothing more happened. Or less. So yeah, her more calculations were off still.
It's a very funny moment where she's like, her math was a little off.
But they do get overtaken by the shockwave.
Shockwave, and it sort of wipes everything out.
Yeah. Similar to the pilot episode when we get sucked into the Delta Quadrant. We get whited out by the caretaker, same way.
Yeah. Well, Rick Colby directed both of those.
There's a little whiteout
moment here. And then from the whiteout, we come into a white inn, and we're in sick bay, and it's basically Janeway's POV, although we don't know it at first.
JC Shippers rejoice.
And Chakotay leans in to her view.
Yes.
And then we see her wake up, and she looks around. The team is all alive. They're safe.
Yeah.
They're sleeping, and Janeway and Chakotay talk. And Chakotay says they found the Delta Flyer drifting near a gas giant, but everyone was all right. And they didn't find any signs of dark matter, life forms, or any other ships. He says, what happened to you guys? And she thinks for a minute, and then she says, well, the good shepherd went after some lost sheep and ran into a wolf. Chakotay says, well, did you find the sheep you were looking for? And she looks around at her team and she says, yes, I think I did.
Yeah.
And that's the end of our...
That's the end of it. But I do like the way Colby shot that final scene, because it was a really comforting JC moment to have Chakotay there. And it was sort of like everyone breathed a sigh of relief. And that was off of that camera, that composition of that scene, just the way that was shot. It was just very relaxing and sort of like a sigh of relief. So I like that final scene of this episode.
It was nice. I really like this episode, even though it broke my rule of everybody needs to be included.
Yeah.
I thought The guest cast was great. I thought it was directed beautifully. Very different kind of story. It was a lot of fun. So
many elements. They really packed a lot into this episode for sure. So what is your lesson for this episode, Good Shepherd?
My lesson is, I wrote down, no one is a lost cause. I actually have two lessons. But the main one is, no one's a lost cause. That Janeway went after these lost sheep and she didn't give up on any of them. And they all had big breakthroughs in terms of their self-esteem or their view of themselves and who they were and how they fit in. So, my first lesson is, no one's a lost cause. My second lesson is, it's probably better not to be too smart or too dumb. Just be right in the middle. It's safer in the middle. Like, you don't want to be in the lower decks. You don't want to be in command. You just want to be in the middle.
Okay.
Because when you're in the command, you're always, every week we're getting in hot water. And if you're in the lower decks, you're in trouble down there. So you just want to be in the middle. That's my second lesson. What about you?
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Okay, so my overall lesson has to do with Heron, really, because Heron really liked to keep himself in that little tiny space and didn't ever want to leave that space. So my overall lesson is that everybody, and this is very similar to the type of world we live in now, because of technology, there are so many people that never venture outside. You know what I'm saying? They just cooped up and they just do all their work and stay in one place. So really my overall lesson is, you got to get out there and smell the roses. You got to get out there and just be out in nature. Just, you know, get out and do something. Don't stay at home all the time. And then my other lesson, which is not really serious, is, do not let anyone other than Tom Paris pilot the Delta Flyer.
Yes. Thank you.
Simple as that.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
I agree with you. Right. What is your rating?
My rating. I'm going to give this episode, I'm going to give it a 7.4 is what I'm going to give it.
Interesting.
7.4. Okay. And I do think that the admirals and captains will rank this lower. I think they'll put it at about 6.9.
Okay.
That's my feeling.
Well, I gave this a rating of 8.
Whoa, you went high.
I really liked this episode. And though it broke my rule, I think the reason I liked it is the captain had such a strong emotional story that I was along on her team for this ride.
Okay.
And I also liked the fact that we were getting to meet, even though it wasn't our series regular crew, we were getting a sense of our ship in a way that I think is really important, that there's people outside of the series regular crew that we should acknowledge, that keep that ship going.
Of course.
And the only reason I didn't even give it higher, honestly, is I felt like the alien, the subspace story was a little thin. I feel like we didn't explain it in the end, who these aliens were.
Okay, all right.
If it was that
eliminate
was the part that,
eliminate that alien storyline, what would your rating be now?
If that had been,
if that had been fleshed out properly. Okay. If that had been fleshed out properly,
I'd give it close to a 9, probably.
Wow. So 8.8, 8.9.
Yeah. 8.8, 8.9.
Wow. My goodness.
Yeah. I really liked this episode. I thought it was really good.
All right.
Okay. Let's see what the admirals and captains think, though. The admiral and captain's average rating for Good Shepherd is 7.4.
Oh, that's right. That's my regular rating.
Yeah. There you go. Wow. So this was actually a pretty well-received episode overall. Yeah. That's a pretty decent average rating. And well, good. I'm surprised, because I thought it was about shepherd's pie, this episode. And it really surprised me.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to our recap and discussion of Good Shepherd. Join Robbie and I next week when we will recap and discuss the episode Live Fast and Prosper.
I like that title.
I get it.
Yeah. And remember how you said you did not remember the title Good Shepherd at all? I do not remember the title Live Fast and Prosper at all. So there you go.
Okay. Well, we'll see you next week.
Mm-hmm. Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material.